60s, rain again.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and it's my pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, and always glad to get your phone calls and your emails. If you want a great conspiracy that's actually operating in real life, if you think that America's poor need help buying groceries, and as a society, we've seen our Congress vote to have SNAP, originally called food stamps, and most people still call it food stamps, but it's officially known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And if you say, I'm in favor of that, sometimes people fall on hard times in America. We ought to help them out. Now, if you're in favor of that, and I would say for those people who truly need that extra assistance, I think they ought to get some help from SNAP or food stamps, if you want to call it that. EBT is another commonly used term. If you want that, do you want that aid to be stolen by deadbeat Americans who refuse to work a job, or by illegal aliens who are invited over the last 4 years to invade this country by a failed president who was never really elected to the office to begin with? I think you'd have to say, we got to save that money for the people who are Americans, who are actually entitled to it, and put them on the program and kick everybody else off. That is exactly what Donald Trump is doing. And yet they're getting incredible pushback. Let me give you an example of what's happening here in the Pacific Northwest. Both Oregon and Washington, the Democrat leadership of both states has objected strongly to the federal cuts to the SNAP program. Except they're trying to portray this, it's just cuts that are going to help poor people. No, it's cuts that are going to hurt people who are illegally in our country, people who are deadbeats and will not get a job. And I'll make the case to you. And if you're a naysayer and you want to argue the alternative, I'd be glad to take the call. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, boy, we put naysayers right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Our poll on X, this has to do with Netflix and the kind of choices you make about the kind of indoctrination and subversion that you allow to come into your home and affect your family. Would you cancel Netflix for pushing transgender ideology on your kids? This first really got some attention when Elon Musk went on X, the social media that he owns, and he urged the public to cancel their Netflix subscriptions, quote, for the health of their children. And why is that? Because people have become aware, and I think to some extent they've become aware of this, because of the assassination of Charlie Kirk a few weeks ago, they took a close look at what Netflix was doing. They were running a program called Paranormal Park, which is aimed specifically at children. If you've watched it, I've watched a few clips from it. It is specifically aimed at children. It's not the kind of cartoon that adults would be watching. It includes a transgender storyline. And what Musk put up on X was, yeah, this is messed up, not okay for kids. And you might even wonder, the people who created this Paranormal Park, what exactly was their intention to try to put a storyline in there to advance an adult idea? And that is one that you want to change your gender from male to female or female to male. You're going to have radical surgery. You're going to take hormones that attempt to medically mutilate and modify yourself. That's one thing. If adults do it, I guess there's nothing I can do to stop them, with two exceptions. Number one, you shouldn't be doing it to kids. And we're seeing an increasing number of hospitals and doctors who've said, we want nothing to do with this. Now, Western Europe got to that point a couple of years ago. They said, we're not going to keep on mutilating kids. But the second group, if you're an adult and you want to do all kinds of medical mutilation of your own body, I guess if you can find a doctor who thinks it's ethical to do that kind of thing, go ahead and do it. but do it on your own dime. Don't tell us that it has to be paid for with Medicaid. Anyway, the poll on X can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, yesterday's poll was the most decisive result I've seen in the last couple of years on our X poll. We do a daily poll question from the news of the day. Yesterday's question was, should Republicans agree to fund health care for illegal aliens to end the government shutdown that began at midnight night before last? 99% of you said no. Now, it's a rare day when we see a 99% result on the X poll. Only 1% of you said yes, and I would dearly love to talk to those naysayers about it. Let me get back to SNAP, because this is a serious issue. You're seeing headlines like this: Oregon complies with big, beautiful bill food assistance changes as governor calls them simply wrong. Now, I'm fairly sure I know that Governor Tina Kotek doesn't know right from wrong any more than she knows up from down. But here's the quote from her. The federal cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, or food stamps, are simply wrong, and they will hurt Oregon families. I oppose these changes. Our top priority now is making sure that every impacted Oregonian knows what's changing and where to turn for help. Now, I think that the legacy cartel media has been doing a terrible job of explaining this to people and saying, well, what are these changes that they're making? Number one, if you are illegally in the United States, you don't get food stamps. And if you thought, well, isn't that already the federal law? States have found ways, including Kotek State, Oregon, and Bob Ferguson State, Washington. They have worked around those federal rules. They have effectively violated the law, and they deliver food stamp benefits to people who are not legally in this country. But the second, and I think the more obnoxious problem, is work rules. Both Oregon and Washington don't want to enforce the federal work rules that have been in the SNAP program for decades. And why don't they want to? Because they want to hand out government freebies to everybody, and it shouldn't matter. Well, the work rules are going to say to you, if you are of working age, not a child, not a senior, if you are not disabled and you don't have any children under the age of 14, then you need to work a part-time job, at least 20 hours a week, 80 hours a month, or you get no food stamps. Now, you might find that draconian, and if you do, I'd be glad to take the call. Can you explain to me, if a friend of yours said, I don't have a job, I'm not looking for a job, I don't want a job, I like sitting at home doing nothing, but would you buy me a bag of groceries or two? Would you tell that friend, why, sure, you're able-bodied, you have no children under the age of 14 at home, I'd be happy to go down and take my post-tax income money and spend it on bags of groceries to supply your needs while you sit there on your backside and play video games. Now, if somebody actually does that for a member of their family or a friend, I'd love to meet that person and say, do you really think you're doing them any good when you tell them you have no responsibility at all for your own welfare? You don't have a job, you don't have any kids, you don't have a disability, you are not either a child or a senior, you're of working age, you're capable, you could go out and work a job, but I'll buy your groceries for you. Now, there may be somebody out there who actually does that and believes that is the right thing to do. As far as I'm concerned, it is enabling the worst kind of degradation of a human being to say, you don't have to work, but you're still going to eat, and you'll be eat on my dime. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your phone calls and emails. I got to cover the lies of one Jeff Merkley, Democrat member of the U.S. Senate. I'll tell you those lies coming up next. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Like this, people are going to talk. Here's Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
Lars.
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Now, there is under Title 10 two exceptions for this. And those two exceptions are, one, an invasion, and second, a rebellion. Well, clearly, there is nothing happening in Portland that meets what those terms were meant to imply.
Now, that is U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley, who apparently is not much smarter than a bag of hammers. And when one U.S. senator from the Northwest tells a pack of lies about President Trump and his actions using the National Guard in Portland, I have to call Jeff Merkley out. Merkley lectured reporters at a press conference at length yesterday about the federal laws that restrict the use of the military inside the borders of the United States. You heard the statement he made. There are only two things covered by Title 10, invasion and rebellion. Well, Jeff Merkley should know better. With his background working as an analyst at the Pentagon, you'd think that Merkley would actually know the law. He claims that Title 10 of the U.S. Code only allows the president to use the military in America for two things, invasion or rebellion. Senator Merkley left out the third thing that is allowed by Title 10. I would suspect that most of the reporters who had heard him make these false statements have never looked at Title 10, even though it's as close as their smartphone. And the difference is significant. To execute federal laws is the third reason you may use the military or the National Guard, precisely the reasons that President Trump is sending the Guard to one small neighborhood of Southwest Portland to safeguard the offices of ICE. And how do I know that the law allows that? Because way back when, President Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne to Little Rock, Arkansas. If Title 10 did not allow him to do that, he would have been acting illegally. JFK used the National Guard to get James Meredith into his Mississippi University after that university rejected him because he's a black American. LBJ used the Guard in Alabama for a similar reason. I guarantee you that the racist Democrats running those states did not invite the National Guard. Neither did the illegal alien-friendly Democrat Tina Kotek, currently governor of Oregon, although I wouldn't bet on a second term. I'll leave it to you to decide whether Senator Merkley, a federal lawmaker these last 16 years, is just ignorant about the law or he's just lying. Our question of the day is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Cindy writes in, Lars, so Governor Tina Kotek is now complaining about the cost of the National Guard? Really? What about the cost of all these riots? She didn't seem to have a problem with that cost. Unbelievable, signed Cindy. Well, Cindy, it gets worse than that. Imagine this. The media has gone along with Governor Kotek. Their headlines all talk about National Guard deployment could cost $3.8 million, could cost $10 million, could cost any number the Democrats want to make up. Do you know who's paying that cost? The federal government. I realize it comes out of all of our taxes, but this is not the state government. When was the last time you heard Tina Kotek worry that the state government was spending too much money and not getting much value for those dollars spent? She didn't seem to worry about it at all. And then I looked up the stories from last year when the National Guard was mobilized by Governor Tina Kotek to go out and fight wildfires. Not a single one of those stories even mentioned the cost of calling up the National Guard when it was a cost paid for by Oregon taxpayers. And yet, all of a sudden, if Donald Trump is doing it, the cost is a big deal. Now, my favorite post on X today by Charles Heath. Lars, for the Super Bowl halftime show, could we have Bad Company instead of Bad Bunny? Could we have Eddie Money instead of Bad Bunny? Could we have anybody instead of Bad Bunny? Have a nice day. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to the Democrat supermajority in Salem, which has passed a record-sized transportation tax hike. $4.3 billion, the biggest single tax hike in Oregon history. And why don't they want to put it to a vote? Republicans have been properly pointing out the reason the Democrats don't want to put it to a vote, because they know what the outcome of that vote would be. The people would vote it down. So they've simply said, We're going to do taxation without representation. We don't care what the people say. We're going to raise your taxes. And no, we're not going to let you vote on it, because we know that if we let you vote, you would say no. That is the attitude about Democrats in their version of democracy. Today's best email, but you can always send more on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday to talk@LarsLarsen.com. Today's is brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. I've seen it with my own eyes because I hired them to do it for me. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. Jenna writes in, Lars, I heard on the radio that furloughed government workers can apply and get unemployment payments. That is so wrong. For one, they are not laid off or fired. Also, part of the deal to get these benefits is you have to show that you're applying to other jobs and interviewing. These people are not going to do that. They're just going to wait till they go back to work. So when they go back to work and get their back pay, is the state going to take the money back that they gave them, or is that extra money that they get to keep? Also, correct me if I'm wrong, I've always thought government workers didn't pay into the unemployment system. If so, why are they dipping into the taxpayers' pot? Glad to be with you on a Thursday. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. I heard the bad news this week that a notorious rapist in Spokane, Washington, is going to be walking out of prison. His name is Kevin Coe. The only connection I have is that I was in Spokane at the time that Kevin Coe, then known anonymously as the South Hill Rapist, was doing his awful deeds. And in fact, he raped a coworker of mine. I knew her reasonably well, and she was one of his victims. Well, they put him in prison, and he should have been there for his entire lifetime. He should rot to death in prison, as far as I'm concerned. But the state of Washington says at this point it doesn't have proof that Kevin Coe is a sexual predator anymore, and they are not fighting his request to be released for a hearing set for this morning. We'll wait to see what happens, but he could be walking out. He has now served 4 decades in prison and civil commitment. It looks like that time could end this week. It's not the first time that Coe was set to walk free, but if that happens, that is a real travesty of justice. I have a friend, Josh Marquis, who you hear on the show from time to time, a former prosecutor. He talks about an idea called truth in sentencing. And if you ask, well, what's that? It means that when a jury decides that you have committed a crime and that the proof is beyond a reasonable doubt, and then you are sentenced to a term in prison, if the judge says you're getting 20 years, you should serve 20 years. If he says you're locked up for the rest of your life, then you should get for the rest of your life. If you decide to start turning loose real predators like Kevin Coe, then what you're telling the public is don't believe anything that a judge says. Don't believe anything that a jury decides. There is no truth in sentencing, and that is just plain wrong. Coming up in a moment, is Portland's economic recovery at risk if federal troops come to the city? Local leaders in the Portland Metro Chamber are worried about this. I'm going to talk to the president of the Metro Chamber in just a moment.
The Lars Larson Show. He's the best investment in talk radio, and it's free. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Is Portland's economic recovery, which doesn't seem to be happening in my estimation, at risk if federal troops are sent to the city of Portland? Local leaders in the Portland Metro Chamber have been warning about this, so I look forward to my opportunity to talk to Andrew Hone, who serves as president and CEO of the Portland Metro Chamber. Mr. Hone, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be with you. Thanks so much for taking the time to have the conversation.
You bet. Why is it a bad thing for the president of the United States to activate the National Guard to go and police what even the Portland police describe as one square block of a city that's 145 square miles?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, I think the initial conversation versus what the deployment orders are certainly different. You know, the president said that we are all living in hell here in Portland and that this is a crime-ridden war zone. And so those were the sort of initial commentaries and rhetoric that we were hearing. Hey, actually look at the deployment orders and they're quite different where it is specific just to the ICE facility, which is on the very southern edge of the central city. So I think the initial reaction that we had was, I think, very, very, yeah, rational to say, hey, this is not, in fact, hell. We are not currently in an active war zone. And, you know, you can tell that to my three children. I dropped off at school this morning, and I'm live from the World Trade Center here, and I don't see a war. But, you know, that was the sort of initial reaction. But the follow-up piece, the deployment orders, are quite different from that.
Andrew, did you drop your kids off in downtown Portland?
Yep, we live about a half mile from downtown. I work in downtown. My wife's practice as well is here. And so we are in downtown. I'm currently in downtown Portland right now, and it's looking pretty good.
It's looking pretty good. So even with all the open drug use, even with the homeless people camped out, even with the feces and the needles on the sidewalks, everything's fine?
Well, no, of course not. And you know this, Lars, hey, we're the first ones and perhaps the loudest voice to be critical of local leadership, state leadership. No one, and me alone, would at all apologize or defend the conditions that we have here. It is certainly a place that needs rapid improvement and certainly investment in public safety. I'm proud that the city council this year voted to increase the public safety budget, and that's happened multiple years in a row, and I'm really thrilled that the largest recruiting class in Portland Police Bureau ever just was sworn in. And so I'm not here to claim at all we're at the mountaintop, but these are the sort of things, smart policy choices that we should have been making for a long time that we're starting to do now, and we are encouraged by that trend line. Not at all spiking a football.
As the head of the Metro Chamber, are you seeing more businesses coming to Portland or leaving Portland? When you net out the departures and the arrivals, which direction is it going?
Yeah, I would say our economy is certainly challenged, and I think that is clearly evident in the jobs numbers that we're seeing, and the investments that we're seeing in our community. The story of the economy isn't all roses here in the Rose City, and that is a hard juxtaposition against 30 straight years of economic boom times with population growing at an unprecedented rate amongst urban centers. So the rapid change has certainly been significant. And so we do have a lot of work, and I am very concerned about the economy here. And there are tons of reasons for that. Our tax structure, poor choices on public and safety investments a decade ago are leading to our challenges that we face in livability now, lack of our ability to address the unsheltered crisis or the drug use. But we are seeing, like I said, those changes. We decriminalize drugs, and guess what? We recriminalize them. We used to defund the police. Now we're funding the police. And these things aren't going to flip the light switch on overnight. And I'm not pretending that we're somehow a perfect place, but we are making grown-up decisions now that I am encouraged by, and the economy is starting to show some signs of responding. But we have a lot more work to do, and it certainly is public safety, but I also say it's also our taxes. We need to get to work on that as well.
Well, you've seen the city say, we're going to add more people who are police liaisons. In other words, people without guns, people without handcuffs, people without the authority to make arrests. I watched one of them try to help a woman yesterday who was surrounded by the crowd down at the ICE headquarters. I watched the video. She was trapped by this crowd. She said she was afraid, and this poor liaison guy is standing there saying, I can't do anything about this. Now, when people see that and they say, you mean you have citizens who merely to drive into their own neighborhood to go to their own home are confronted by a mob of people and the police say, sorry, can't help you? And that's the place that people want to move businesses to?
Well, I can't comment on that specific incident that you're talking about, but anybody that is causing trouble or doing something illegal deserves to be arrested and held.
Are they? Is that happening, Andrew? Do you see evidence that that's happening, or do you see that evidence that we don't prosecute very many people, we don't arrest very many people, the police are severely defunded, and we're adding back people who are sort of cops wearing uniform, but no gun, no arrest power, no none of that? Do you see the actions coming from City Hall that will cause a turnaround in crime, especially in the downtown of Portland?
Yeah, let's drop some facts here, right? So 51% drop in homicides in the first half of 2025. That's the largest of any major American city. Gun violence has fallen by 30%, and nearly 60% since 2022. And then car theft. Let's talk about that, because I think a lot of people experience that as their that one hurts. It's down to 2015 levels. So I agree with you, Lars. There's no question we need to grow our police force. We're huge advocates. And like I said at the beginning of the show, the city council this year voted to invest in, let me repeat, Portland Police Bureau officers, and the largest recruiting class in its history was just sworn in. So again, not going to argue there are terrible incidents happening in Portland, and we're making smart decisions that are actually bearing results. And so we're on pace this year to have well under 100 homicides. I'd argue that that's probably the lowest rate of any major American city, red state, blue state, anywhere around. And I'm not, again, saying anyone isn't victimless here in this community. I'd be the chief among them to say we need more support for police, more law enforcement, more prosecutors, more jail beds, more sheriffs. We need all of the above, and we're proud of our local law enforcement. I tell you this, we stand with local law enforcement, and we really support the direction Chief Day has taken the department.
Okay, so let's go back to President Trump and the National Guard. President Trump's focused on the immigration problems and the obstructionist tactics of the city and the state, and said we've got to protect ICE, we've got to protect the federal buildings. Do you now endorse that?
Well, listen, if that's the way it started off, I think we would certainly have reconsidered, but that is not what we are reacting to. So I think federal law enforcement, protecting federal buildings, I'm not a constitutional expert, I'm not going to weigh in on that, but I think it is a reasonable perspective.
Isn't that what he did in his first term, Andrew?
Well, actually, it's really interesting that you bring it up, and I'll point to you. I work across the street, Lars, from the Justice Center. So I am looking at it as you and I speak right now. And I can tell you the things that happened back in 2020 were terrible. We had some really
Let me finish my answer here. All right.
We had good things happening during the day, big protests, and then at nighttime we saw things really descend, and it was terrible. And then these unmarked vans were deployed into the center city, and it was right at the moment when things were really dying down, and what happened at that moment, we saw a huge spike back up. And so I would personally, I prefer to avoid that situation. And what I would really like to see, and I think you could agree with this one, I would really like to see the federal law enforcement, who we have here. We have FBI, DEA,
I've got to get one last question, Andrew. Are you now endorsing what the president is doing?
Yeah, and we want to see them working together, Lars. That's what I would love to see happen.
Are you endorsing the president's move to send National Guard to guard the ICE facility? Will you endorse that?
Well, I would say that we would broadly see that we could see that being acceptable. I just don't know what's happening, to be honest with you.
Well, as long as you listen to Tina Kotek and Mayor Wilson, you're probably not going to get the straight story. They're the ones who fed you the line that the feds were taking over Portland. That's Andrew Hone, who is president of the Portland Metro Chamber. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Adjust your volume. He's just that loud. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I have always thought that the number one job of local government is public safety. Everything else, parks, schools, roads, everything else comes second to public safety. So when I saw that Thurston County, which is facing a budget shortfall, probably because the county spends too much money on all kinds of other nonsense. So they say we're $24 million short. You, the sheriff, Sheriff Derek Sanders, you have to take a $4.5 million cut to your budget. Sheriff Derek Sanders, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Does it make sense to have your department take this kind of cut, or could the county find savings enough to save all the money they're short without cutting the sheriff?
Well, I don't know if they'll be able to find the savings for it. I mean, one of those things where someone's going to cut somewhere. People are at the point where we're in an economic place where people are going to lose jobs. That's just a reality. And, you know, the state's raising taxes. The federal government gets the most taxes from people. They have the largest budget. And the state and the feds are at war right now. It's no secret here in Washington State. So there's going to be fallout somewhere. And I think that's just a reality. The big piece for me is just helping people understand. It's not my job to allocate my budget. That's why we have a balance in government. But at least people have to understand what the consequences would be.
What is the total budget of Thurston County? Do you happen to know, Sheriff? I would imagine.
Well, the total budget's very large, but that's an area where I think we could all use more education. You know, we're talking about a very small portion of Thurston County's overall budget, because most of what Thurston County's budget is pass-through funds from state and federal contracts. The portion that we're actually talking about is anywhere from, depends on who you talk to, $120 to $160
million. $120 to $160 million. So the money they'll save by cutting your budget $4.5 million is going to be 2.5%?
Yeah, and that's where we're looking at, right, is that each year the county, every biennial budget, the county has to basically guess where they think revenue will land. Sales tax is starting to flatten across the country. People are spending less money as financial troubles are occurring all throughout the country. It's not just Washington. But Washington is in a very unique place, obviously. We've seen that the state has raised a lot of taxes, gas tax, carbon tax, all these different various, you know, we're talking about taxes on security services, taxes on advertising. And what we really found is that that was just to try to cover the state's shortfall. There was not a lot of extra money that was handed out beyond that to the counties and the cities. So where we're at now is what we're trying to figure out is where exactly that shortfall is going to land for the county. The county thinks it's going to be anywhere from $26 to $36 million. So they're trying to, again, when we come down to the county level, our budget is relatively small compared to state and federal. So $4.5 million is a big deal at the county level.
How much of that is, how much of your budget is $4.5
million? $4.5 million, well, I'm not good at math on the fly. I need a calculator.
But
my total budget is about, $60 million if you include our sales tax.
Okay. So you called it the single largest setback for law enforcement and public safety in the history of Thurston County, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, $4.5 million would be five times the cut that Thurston County Sheriff's Office took during the Great Recession in 2008. 867,000 was the largest cut Thurston County Sheriff's Office has ever had to take.
I mean, you've got about 200 folks, right? You've got about half that, a little more than half that out on the road, and a little less than half of that 200 is at the jail. What are you going to have to cut?
Well, jail, we know we're taking a cut in the jail. The county commissioners know that we have 12 corrections deputies who are float deputies who are not assigned to anything. They're vacant. We're holding them vacant on purpose because we knew we were going to lose those positions. It's part of a work release program that we're no longer doing because it doesn't meet the needs of the current jail staff, or the jail population, I should say. So we knew we were going to take that. But what we're looking at now is beyond those cuts is where we start to really take an impact. At $4.5 million, we would have to shut a dorm down in the jail. We're no longer facing a $4.5 million. We're now looking at 2.5. Told the county commissioners I can work more with 2.5.
Absolutely. Anytime you get $2 million back in your budget. So how many beds are you going to have to empty, or how many beds are not going to be available to lock up criminals if this goes through?
At the $4.5 million, it was going to be about 70 beds for a jail that's already full. So that's where we started getting into these really tough conversations about what inmates do we work to try with the prosecutor and release, and then what crimes do we no longer accept to backfill those beds. At $2.5 million, I will not have to shut the jail dorm down. However, the county will have to understand that we will be running an overtime jail. There's no way around it. We're talking about cutting areas like recruiting. We're talking about cutting areas like transport. So all of our inmates, they have medical transport. A lot of them are not in good health. Those require deputies two at a time to transport these inmates back and forth to the hospital. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, they don't get a break. So those are some of the areas where we have to really start talking about, are we going to be running an overtime jail and we should be planning for the burnout?
Wow. So you're going to be, one way or another, you're going to put more criminals back on the street, right?
Yeah, at the 4.5 level, yeah. At 2.5, we're running overtime. And once we get lower than 2.5, we can start talking about status quo.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you something. I've seen some other jails where they started to charge the inmates for just about everything. And I've talked to sheriffs who've done that. Have any of those efforts been tried? We're up against the break, but I'm curious. Have you tried that?
We already do it. We have a financial operations assistant, and she is an absolute bulldog. If anyone has even a shred of money, of health care, of Medicare, it's billed out. We bill out, and she saves the county taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Give her credit. What's her name?
Oh, well, I'm not. There's some privacy issues there. I'm not going to name drop anyone, but okay. She is a stud.
Whoever it is out there, this sheriff, I appreciate it. Whoever's out there saving all their money for Thurston County, congratulations, young lady.
The Lars Larson.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In
exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars. And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Now, I have a dog in the fight on this because I live in Clark County, but I've noticed that Clark County, like many Northwest communities, has a problem. We've got crime. We've got diminished police forces. We've got, for whatever reason, diminished prosecution of criminals and diminished incarceration of criminals. And I've wished for a long time that we could make that change. Well, now, perhaps Clark County voters will get an opportunity to see that happen. Alicia Evelyn Chandra joins me now. She is going to run for Clark County prosecutor. She is an assistant city attorney. She is an experienced prosecutor and a JAG officer. That's Judge Advocate General's Corps in the Washington Army National Guard. Ms. Chandra, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Lars. I'm so happy to be on the show right now. I want to give a quick shout out to everyone that's listening that loves you so much, including my mom. I did not realize she was like your number one fan.
She's well, so I didn't realize right that now. Either. Is she a prosecutor as well?
No, my mom is your stereotypical immigrant that worked hard, became a single mom, never been on welfare, never received any kind of child support, but then still raised two daughters to go out and conquer the world and not become victims of our circumstances. So she is kind of like your all-American dream right there, and absolutely was just like, I love Lars. He's so smart. He's going to have all the good talking points. Oh, my gosh. And then a whole bunch of other people that are listening in as well, too, including cops, that before we even get jumping into my why I'm running, Officer Alex Rich. I don't know if you have heard of him, but he's kind of a big deal here at the Vancouver Police Department. He's over here, you know, saving raccoons and then commandeering e-bikes to go catch criminals. But he is the real MVP. They're listening in, some awesome defense attorneys, Aaron McAleer and Bennett Brandenburg. They're all fans. So I got fans from all sides of the political spectrum that want to see a change.
You have some Democrats who believe in arresting criminals and putting them in prison?
They do.
Good. I'm glad to hear it because, by the way, thanks for the nice accolades and thanks to your mom. Maybe someday I'll meet her. But I looked at you on paper, a JAG officer in the National Guard, a prosecutor and all that. This is what I want because Tony Golic, I think, leaves a lot to be desired. And I've been very frustrated that prosecutors, King County frustrates me, Multnomah County frustrates me. The last thing I need is frustration from the county I live in, where they don't seem to want to lock up criminals. How are you going to address that?
Yeah, I think it's really actually a simple thing. I'm joining at a time where both sides, I truly do believe it's a nonpartisan issue to want safety and respect when you come into the criminal justice system. And I have shown people these past 5 years that I've been here and the past 10 years I've spent as a prosecutor, you can be firm and fair. You can hold people accountable and have compassion. And the way that I'm going to do that, Lars, is by enforcing the laws that are already in place. I'll tell you, just yesterday, well, I'm helping charge cases because one of my colleagues is covering for me while I'm covering mental health court, which is an awesome, awesome program. If you get to that, I would love to talk about that and how that would actually help taxpayers when we're more economical in using effective justice strategies or therapeutic court programs. But just yesterday, we get two cases where law enforcement officers are victims and being assaulted. And this current administration seems to think, and you could probably go back and look up even some news articles where it's come out where the current administration thinks it's just part of law enforcement's job to just get assaulted. And so when they're over here referring charges where they're getting assaulted while they're trying to do their job, you see that it's getting what they call exonerated down, meaning they're not charging it as assault on law enforcement or intimidating a public servant. It comes back down here to the city. So now I'm prosecuting these individuals for assault on law enforcement as a misdemeanor as a misdemeanor crime. And you might wonder, okay, so why does that even matter? Who cares? Well, first of all, if you're not charging people correctly, then they're not going to be held accountable, and they're not going to have any kind of incentive to want to even do any kind of program that's going to even try to force them to rehabilitate. Because the issue isn't that we don't have resources. The issue is that we have people that would rather choose the easy way out, which is, let me just get another criminal conviction and go back to the lifestyle choices I was making, instead of making the hard choices, which is actually getting them into structured programs, making them tax-paying citizens, because that's what we actually want, right? We all want people to come back out and pay their taxes and be good citizens. And we know that that is possible because we've seen that. I'm sure you have examples of people that you've seen that have come out.
Ms. Chandra, one of the things that frustrates me is when both Oregon and Washington effectively not just decriminalized, but legalized hard drugs. And they've only crept back from that a little bit. But they had no lever to say to somebody, you can have a felony or you can go into treatment. Take your pick.
Yeah.
And the judges told me 95% of the time they said, I'll go into treatment, I'll quit the drugs, and you got them to do the right thing. But with no lever, you can't get them to do that. That seems to be what you're saying, right?
That's exactly. I mean, oh my gosh, I should just have you as my campaign manager at this point, because
that was my big
So literally in 2020, when I ended up joining the Washington Army National Guard, I actually enlisted. I was 30 years old, and the world was going to chaos, and that's where I thrive. When there's chaos, that's when I just kind of like, I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to join the National Guard. I'm actually going to go do stuff and be around people that choose not to be victims of their life circumstances. And it's truly been the best decision of my life to go from enlisted and then to be an officer and to also have the utmost respect, especially for my 11 Bravos, because I'm in an infantry unit. I call it my 11 Bang Bangs. But in 2020, or at least around that time or shortly before that, is when that Blake decision came down that you're talking about, Lars.
Yep.
And
that's
that
one.
Criminalized. It's crazy. The Not My Pants defense ended up working. And it's exactly what you're saying, Lars. It's addiction is very, very complicated. I don't have a long enough time to go into TED talk about like why it just doesn't work to have the resources out there, right? But if you force people to want to go into these programs, then you actually statistically see that it works. And they didn't, exactly like you said, they didn't have that carrot and the stick approach
You know what, Alicia, the time goes very fast, but before you go, here, we'll talk to you again as this campaign goes on. Where can people find your website to find out more about you as a candidate?
Yes. Oh, where can they find me?
It's
AliciaForProsecutor.com, and then everything is Alicia for Prosecutor. It's A-L-Y-S-H-A, F-O-R, Prosecutor. So you can find me on Instagram, on Facebook, on my website, and then pretty soon here I'll be doing a fundraiser for anyone that donates $100 or more. I have this guy who's making these bullets.
Alicia, I'm up against the clock. That's Alicia Evelyn Chandra, Assistant City Attorney, running for Prosecutor in Clark County. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
When he talks, you have no choice but to listen. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. I know that everybody is wondering when the big government shutdown is going to end. I would predict that it's going to end within 2 weeks. Now, it may even be over by the end of this week, because I think the Democrats are starting to crumble on this. They didn't exactly start out with a good hand to begin with, because what they have is President Trump and the Republicans have said, we've passed a bill. It's a bill Republicans and Democrats have voted for before. It's the same continuing resolution to allow the funding of the government for the next 7 weeks while they continue to negotiate. And the Democrats have said, no, unless you put a lot of money back in there for illegal alien Medicaid, for all these other benefits, we're not going to vote for it. So this is something brand new for the Democrats. But now the Democrats are having a tough time agreeing who's actually in charge and who is negotiating. Listen to this soundbite. The first voice you're going to hear is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, not exactly the smartest Democrat on the House side, and she's on the House side. It's the Senate where the vote has to be taken to be able to pass the budget, not the House side. And then the second voice, of course, is the one you'll never forget, and that is Nancy Pelosi. Take a listen.
I saw some Republican members of Congress saying, oh, well, if we have this shutdown, it's because of AOC. Well, if that's the case, my office is open and you are free to walk in and negotiate with me directly.
There was a thought from the Republicans that AOC is directing this, and she said that senators are welcome to go to her office directly. Is she?
Why are you saying such a ridiculous thing?
She said go to her office directly. Do you think there's any?
She is not directing this. She's wonderful. She's a real team player and the rest of that. You started by saying Republicans saying that she's directing this. She is not. Hakeem Jeffries is.
Actually, that's Nancy Pelosi blowing back on that, saying that's not AOC saying that. Well, you just heard the audio of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying exactly that. She said, I'm going to negotiate this. And she's on the House side of things. And Nancy Pelosi's, did you notice how she sort of choked where she said, well, AOC is she's wonderful and she's a team player. Sounds like AOC is anything but a team player. She's the leader of the squad, which is this breakaway group of very, very liberal Democrats who want to tell the rest of the Democrat Party what to do. That's fine. The Democrats have their problems. And one of the biggest bones of contention when it comes to the government shutdown, Medicaid for illegal aliens. I keep telling you that that is one of the major issues. The Democrats want hundreds of billions of dollars out of a $1.5 trillion increase in what they want in the government's budget for the next 7 weeks, and they want it to pay for Medicaid for illegal aliens. And I have heard, we've run sound bites of Democrats denying flatly that it has anything to do with that. I've had other Democrats who have said, well, it is a little bit of like Ro Khanna, who's a member of Congress from California, said, well, yeah, there's some illegal aliens and Medicaid benefits, but it's a small amount of money. If you want to know what it actually says, I mean, I can read it to you right out of the statutory language. The part of the big, beautiful bill said we're not going to pay for illegal alien health care. We're not going to do Medicaid for illegal aliens. And that is one of the issues that the Democrats want to debate. And so the actual language of the reconciliation bill that was passed in July, the one that Schumer wants repealed, is the one that says you can't give Medicaid to illegal aliens. And then, of course, there is Jeff Merkley, member of Congress, member of the United States Senate. So he's one of the no votes on this, one of the reasons the government is shut down right now. Yesterday, he held a press conference, and I don't get into too many of these. I'd love to be able to ask Senator Merkley more questions. But we had an exchange about this very issue yesterday. Take a listen.
Senator, why does it make sense to shut the government down, reject a bipartisan bill, and why does it make sense for Americans to fund health care for illegal aliens who are in our country, which is part of what the Democrats are insisting on?
Well, it's a Republican shutdown. They hold all the keys to the kingdom. They hold the House, the Senate, the presidency. President Trump himself said back in 2013, when he was not yet president, that it's incumbent upon the president to bring folks together and work out a deal. But when he's in the Oval Office, President Trump took a different direction. He proceeded to say, I'm not talking. He hadn't had a single meeting with Democratic leadership since he came into office in January. And then he pressured the House leader, the Speaker, and the Majority Leader not to meet with their counterparts in the House and Senate. And this is just this is craziness to say that you're not even going to talk, because we've always, in the history of our country, with the exception of last March 15th, had bipartisan bills. Now, you refer to this as a bipartisan continuing resolution?
Yep.
No, it's not bipartisan. It is, in fact, what the Republicans use the term clean, meaning they want to continue the partisan CR from March.
Senator Fetterman vote for it?
Well, you can call it bipartisan because there are a couple Democrats.
Yeah, that's what I call bipartisan.
No,
I'm wondering, a bipartisan bill that your side is voting for?
Hey, Lars, we got to keep it moving, so I want the senator to
ask this question. I get to give you an answer, but we're not engaging in a big back and forth here. But the simple fact is, bipartisan here means folks sat down and worked out a bipartisan deal. This was a pure partisan continuation of the bill from March 15th.
Yeah, for the bill from March 15th, the one the Democrats voted for. And you notice Merkley never goes anywhere near the question of why should Americans fund the health care of illegal aliens? And then he wants to say, and it's a purely partisan bill. Only Republicans are supporting it. Well, oh, yeah, I guess there are some Democrats who support it on the House side. And, yeah, there's John Fetterman and some of the independents who support it on the Senate side. So, in other words, Jeff Merkley says, well, I guess you can call that bipartisan. Yeah, Senator, when Republicans and Democrats vote for the same bill, most of us call that bipartisan. Apparently, Jeff Merkley does not think of that as bipartisan. Now, why is that important? Because the Democrats don't want to own this shutdown, and yet they do own the shutdown. When they say Republicans have all the keys to the kingdom, no, they don't. The Republicans, without the Democrats jumping on board, without 60 votes in the U.S. Senate, cannot pass that budget bill. Do they have all the Republicans? Yep. Do they have some of the Democrats? Yep. Do they have any of the Republicans defected? Nope. Are the Democrats refusing to fund the government? Yep. Then you own the shutdown. Let's go to Joseph. Hey, Joseph, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Okay, Lars, you were talking to Andrew Hone, I think it was, the city official, earlier about the
Chamber of Commerce. Chamber of Commerce president. Yep.
I would like to call him out, because I was the veteran May 6, 2021, that was assaulted by BLM and Antifa during the day, during the Patrick Kimmons March. They almost killed me, robbed me, pulled guns. And this had went on for hours, where they were destroying property, assaulting people. The police were told to stand by.
Hey, but Joseph, that's almost 5 years ago. He was addressing the current situation. I'm not defending him. I think he's wrong. Yeah. I think Hone is wrong to say everything's hunky-dunky in Portland, but he's trying to put the best face on it today. What does that have to do with what happened almost 5 years ago?
He stated something about back in 2021, where everything during the night was bad. During the day, it wasn't. During the day, everything was nice and peaceful, but during the night, it wasn't.
That's an interesting point. Joseph, thanks a lot. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Actually won't be at. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We run a lot of audio on this program, and I was tempted to run the soundbite that I saw with Dave Medina being confronted by an LA Times reporter who apparently didn't see the story that was happening right in front of her as Antifa continues to battle with ICE in Southwest Portland. But instead, I'm going to suggest you go sample it off his social media. David joins us now. He is a Portland-based conservative influencer, grassroots leader in the Northwest, and founder of Project Libertas. David, welcome back.
Afternoon, Lars. Thanks for having me again.
One of the things we do cover on this is media and the way that media covers things, because it really does color the way that people see an issue. And I think you see and you've identified that the mainstream media wants to create a brand new narrative. And it's nothing about a terrorist organization making war on an American law enforcement agency and the uncooperation of a city and a state with stopping that war on ICE. They want a different narrative. What do you think it is? And what did that conversation that you taped involving an L.A. Times news reporter, how did that tell you what was going on?
Yeah, well, you know, I think your average American, Lars, has woken up to the lies of the media, the legacy media, the mainstream media. That's why nobody watches them anymore. That's why someone like me exists and does what I do. I wouldn't have to exist if these people did their job. What I saw that LA Times coming up to me trying to make me the story as a right-wing, I say air quote, right-wing media, instead of covering the craziness going outside, happening outside the ICE building, is just a perfect example of where we are right now in America with the legacy media. She was more focused on me than the screaming idiots in front of the ICE building, throwing paint, throwing slurs at ICE officers, throwing hurling threats. That's what she was more focused on me and my coverage.
And I kind of wonder then, what would the media, because is it an attempt to say this isn't really a problem? There's nothing that we saw there. It's just a bunch of conservatives working in media and social media to try to make a problem where there is no problem. You know, at which point you'd have to say, then why is the building boarded up? Why are people being arrested for assaulting officers? You say, oh, that's just that's no big deal. Don't pay no attention.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, I think what she was trying to do was she kind of exposed herself, Lars. I think what they were trying to do, because they're so threatened by independent journalists and they're so threatened by people like you, Lars, who actually tell the real story to the people, that they were trying to make a story. The LA Times reporter that approached me the other night was trying to make me the story and was trying to maybe do something like package us all together and make our credibility go down or something. She was trying to do something. And I actually noticed something else, Lars, when I was down there. Whenever the feds would come out and arrest somebody, the cameras would be pointed, the local media, I'm talking about the local media down there, who is just as much as a problem as this national media. Our local media here in Oregon is disgusting. The way that they, I mean, I'll just call them straight out. The Oregonian is disgusting. Yep. The Oregonian is disgusting, and other local media outlets, their cameras were more pointed at the feds than it was at the actual people, the actual rioters. I couldn't believe it. I was like, why aren't you guys covering the real story?
Well, in fact, there's another piece to this, and I want your take on it because my audience has heard my take. But you've got two narratives. One is you've got the chief of police of Portland saying, hey, we're not talking about 145 square miles of city. We're talking about one city block. But then if you listen to the governor and the mayor, they say, my God, Donald Trump is trying to take over the entire city of Portland. He wants to federalize the entire city. There will be troops marching in the streets everywhere. And you say, well, which one is it? One square block or federalizing and taking over the entire city? Because the same people on the same side, you know, the city and the state and the police department, are telling two different stories. Which one is it?
Right. And I'm sure Bob Day is a great, nice guy, Lars, but we're actually about to do a video on this guy. There's a lot more to Bob Day, police chief, Portland police chief, Bob Day, than that meets the eye.
By the way, right? There's a lot. How many police chiefs in America have a side business? Right.
Right. And what is that side business? Yeah, he does consulting. He does basically DEI consulting for businesses. We're about to show you exactly. You know, they're trotting this guy out on CNN. And let me just make it clear. Lars and I, we support law enforcement. This is nothing against law enforcement. This is calling out the problem where it's at. I have many Portland police officers who have come up to me at church and other places say, we support what you're doing and thank you for having our back. So this is nothing against law enforcement. Like, they're probably going to try to make this, but there is a lot more to Bob Day than meets the eye. And there's a reason why he's in this position. There's a reason why they're trotting him out on CNN. I have seen this guy in city council meetings, Lars. Like literally like a little rabbit, like a little kitten kind of bending the knee to the radical city council. I couldn't believe it.
Well, and here's the thing. Just so you know, I've talked to Chief Day before. I'm not besties with him or anything like that. The guy makes almost $300,000 a year. If you put the benefits in, he makes over $300,000 a year as police chief. Now, somebody paying me $300,000 a year, they'd have my full attention. But apparently he has time on the side to run a side business and do DEI consulting. And should that tell us that, number one, he's not giving his full attention to his $300,000 job, and number two, it suggests right. that he has a real soft spot in his heart for diversity, equity, and inclusion, which may tell you something about his policing style.
Right, which is actually, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion is actually just reverse race. We all know the DEI lie. Everybody's against that. It's not a popular thing. Even here in Oregon, the Democrats in Oregon are going to try to tell you that it's popular. Everybody wants it. No, we don't. I've talked to tons of Democrats that do not like DEI. I've talked to tons of Democrats of color who don't like DEI. And so it's not popular. But I will tell you, I want to just, you know, if Bob Day would like to sit down with me and talk about this stuff, my goal is not to make his job harder. I support law enforcement, and I want to really support Bob Day and what he's doing. But, you know, he was just out on CNN talking to Caitlin Collins just a little bit ago. Yep. I mean, this guy's making the rounds, trying to. My goal is, Lars, just like yours, we just want to see Portland return to greatness again. We want our city to be released from these radicals. We want our state to be released from these radicals. We don't want to bring in this crazy agenda. We just want common sense brought back. And with Bob Day, people are looking to him, and they might go, well, if the police chief is saying this, then no, there's more than meets the eye with this guy.
Well, and David, I can tell you that Tina and I, we've lived in this area forever, and and I've spent most of my adult life in the Portland metro area. We used to, every weekend, if we weren't in Seattle, we'd be in Portland, we'd be walking up and down different neighborhoods. I mean, and we now, if we have to go there, we get our business done, and we get out. We don't view it as a safe place to be. And, right. and they've allowed this to happen. Would I like to have it come back to its former beauty? Yeah. Do I think that the current leadership of the state and the city are doing that? I don't. I think they're doing a terrible job. And so when I see them making these crazy, I would think that Chief Day would say, oh, President Trump, you're going to call up a bunch of National Guard. You're going to pay the bill. The Oregonian and everybody else is worried about it. How much is this going to cost? They never ask that question about the National Guard when it's for fires or floods or anything else. But now that the feds are paying the bill, why? It's too expensive, says Tina Kotek. And you say, wouldn't Bob Day say, well, if you guys are going to handle this one little problem spot that we've been told by City Hall to ignore and let the Antifa folks do anything they want, go ahead, have at it. You straighten that corner out, that'll give us more resources to put everywhere else. But instead, they're fighting it, saying, how dare the president come in and address this place where we've told officers, don't do anything.
Right. And, you know, I wish Bob Day would just be a little honest. Even if he were to come out and say, hey, look, we don't think President Trump should be sending in the troops here, but yes, we recognize Portland has problems and we are trying to solve them. That's not his message right now, Lars. His message is we're in a city of renewal. Everything's roses and, you know, kumbaya here. Everything's great. Everything's not great. If that were the case, then you wouldn't have businesses leaving. You wouldn't have citizens leaving, decline enrollment in schools. You wouldn't have your pro franchises, the Portland Timbers and the Portland Trailblazers, begging the city to prioritize public safety. You wouldn't have all of that if that were the case. So I just wish you'd just be a little honest with this, and I just don't think that's the case here.
You got to watch that video of David Medina interacting with the LA Times reporter who thought the big story was David Medina, not the Antifa folks making war on ICE, but David Medina, who is a conservative influencer and founder of Project Libertas. David, thanks for the time. Back in a moment, Senator Bruce Garr announces a plan to refer the gasoline tax to voters, and guess what's going to happen then?
Lars. Podcast every show at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Imagine this. So you've got Donald Trump sending National Guard to help out with the clash between Antifa terrorists and the ICE officers in Southwest Portland. And the city of Portland and the state of Oregon say, we're going to take that to federal court. And who do they get as a judge to hear the case? Well, it would be Judge Simon. And who is Judge Simon married to? That would be Democrat member of Congress Suzanne Bonamici. And now the DOJ is saying, hey, there's a conflict of interest here. If the judge and his wife is a Democrat member of Congress and he's going to hear a case involving Donald Trump, we think that's a conflict. The judge should recuse himself. Can you imagine this? Would you think you could get a fair shake if you were Donald Trump and a case was being heard like this and it was being heard in front of a judge whose wife is a Democrat member of Congress? I don't think that squares up at all. Let's go to David Cross. David spends a lot of time and has for more than a decade tracking illegal alien happenings in the Northwest. Hey, David, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, I heard you interview a Portland Chamber of Commerce, Andrew Hahn.
Yeah.
The Chamber of Commerce issued a press release this week. Actually, it was Sunday, indicating that a bunch of Democratic leaders across Northern Oregon and some of the cities had opposed Donald Trump sending in National Guard to help protect the ICE detention center, ICE offices there in Portland, Southwest Portland.
Yeah, we've talked about all that during the interview, David. What's the update?
So there were 14 individual attacks against ICE officers there since June. And, you know, things like have been happening, like shining lasers against helicopters, Customs Border Protection helicopters, and doxing ICE agents and stuff like that. It's unacceptable. What Andrew did as president of the Chamber of Commerce, he was just being a shill for Democratic elected leaders of Multnomah County.
I think you're right, and he was uninformed, because Trump's point all along has been, you've got a tax on ICE officers, you've got a tax on the federal building, you've got a tax on the federal courthouse, and you have a tax on the ICE headquarters in Southwest Portland, and I'm going to send in National Guard to straighten them out. Now, Trump always speaks pretty broadly. He says the place is like a war zone. Well, maybe an overstatement, but the fact is the whole place is a mess right now. And so Hone says, well, the reason we said we opposed it is that it was being portrayed as a takeover of the entire city. The only folks I know of who are suggesting that the National Guard troops are taking over the entire city or the entire state are people like Keith Wilson, the mayor, who doesn't know what he's talking about, and Tina Kotek, the governor, who said this is a takeover of Portland. They know just as well. And then you have the police chief of Portland, Bob Day, come out and say, we're talking about one, for the most part, one city square block, one square block of the city. So he knows the extent of it. And, of course, the governor has talked to the police chief. The mayor has talked to the police chief. They're simply portraying it as something big because they don't want Donald Trump here to clean up the mess that they refuse to deal with. Let's go to William. Hey, William, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you, Lars. I'm glad you took my call. Hey, real quick. So Tina Kotek runs state police. The mayor of Portland runs the city police. Why don't we have our sheriffs all get together and clean house, since they have the highest authority in the state to do enforce the laws?
What would you have the sheriffs do? I agree with you that sheriffs are directly elected by the people. What would you have them do?
Well, they can arrest Tina Kotek and the mayor of the city, since they're not enforcing the law and following laws.
Well, what would the charge be? William, this is where it gets thorny. What would you charge Tina Kotek with?
Unlawful arrest. Yeah, unlawfulness in the state of Oregon.
Well, you can't just charge somebody with unlawfulness. You have to charge them with a crime. So what's the crime you think they've committed that you could actually get a prosecutor to prosecute?
Allowing people to break the law. I mean, if I go out and throw a rock at the police station, I get thrown in jail.
I agree, and I would as well. Yeah, the problem is failure to act on the part of those people is not going to get them arrested. Now, do you know who I think could charge them with a crime? Is the federal DOJ. They could say that your actions and your direction of public resources are obstructing the work of enforcing federal immigration law. And if you obstruct or aid and abet illegal aliens, and they're clearly doing that, you could probably make that case. I mean, the federal DOJ has backed down a little bit from that, but you'll recall a few months ago there was a judge in Wisconsin that allowed an illegal alien to escape out the back door of her courtroom, much as judges have done the same thing in the city of Portland. But this judge in Wisconsin ended up being charged federally. Would I like to see Tina Kotek charged federally? Yeah. do I think they have the evidence yet where they could say her actions actually constituted a violation of federal law and aiding and abetting of illegals? Generically, yes. You know, as far as whether or not she could be charged with a crime, that might be a little bit of a reach. William, I appreciate the call. Glad to have you with me on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Don't forget, every week we celebrate First Amendment Friday. We'll do that tomorrow. Glad to get your calls today at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com.
The Lars Larsen Show. Walgreens. Is the Lars Larsen Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larsen.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars. And Lars. Now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larsen.
Welcome back to Lars Larsen Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and what better day than Conspiracy Theory Thursday than to talk about a conspiracy that's happening in real life. Imagine this. If you've wondered over the last several years why it is that Democrats in Oregon and often in Washington State as well, but in particular I want to focus on Oregon, why they've been able to get away with things that appear from the outside to be criminal acts and then no charges are ever brought. Well, one of the guys who's dug out the real deal on this, the real details, is Jeff Eager, former mayor of Bend, attorney and political consultant. You can find what Jeff writes at Oregon Roundup on Substack. Jeff, welcome back.
Thanks, Laura. It's great to be back.
It sounds like even after the voters sent a very solid message last November, and they said, we don't want Kamala Harris, we don't want Joe Biden, we want Donald Trump as president, which means a change of administration, that there were some nefarious deals going on even as late as a week before Christmas involving the state of Oregon and people who might have otherwise been charged with some fairly serious crimes. Would you mind telling my audience what went on?
Yeah, sure thing. So your audience will remember the LaModa controversy where this marijuana company called LaModa gave a bunch of money to Oregon Democrats. Some of it in cash in brown paper bags, and then hired then Secretary of State Shamia Fagan as a $10,000 a month consultant while she was Secretary of State. That got a lot of attention, and Democrats ran away from LaModa back in 2023, and then there was a federal investigation into that relationship. By the way, LaModa also gave a bunch of money to Tina Kotek and other Democrats.
Yes, they did.
In Oregon. And this federal investigation gets going, and we don't hear anything about it until this spring when it turns out that it was dismissed on December 20th of 2024, a month before Donald Trump took office, and the same day as a visit by then-Attorney General Merrick Garland to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Portland, which was the office that was conducting that investigation. We know later that day that when Garland was there, that Fagan's attorney was informed that the investigation had been dropped.
And so what you have is you have, because our system was built a long time ago, and there is a long period of time between the election in early November, which is set in the Constitution, and when the president actually takes office, and when his administration starts calling the shots, naming the attorney general and the rest, there's a two-month period in there, roughly 2 months, in which the prior administration, which is on its way out the door, can get up to all kinds of nonsense and do contradictory things like that. So Merrick Garland comes to Portland, meets with the U.S. attorney in the morning, and the decision about dropping the criminal case or the investigation against Shamia Fagan happens that afternoon?
Yep. At least we know that afternoon Fagan's attorney was informed. And he wrote in an email to the state of Oregon at 3:13 p.m., I was just informed. So it sure sounds to me like that decision was made during Garland's visit or shortly thereafter that same day.
Now, technically legal, you're an attorney, but it stinks to high heaven. I mean, to me, it's like somebody who's leaving a job, is no longer in charge or won't be in charge on January 20th. That's Joe Biden and his attorney general and everybody else connected to him. But they're still doing things on the way out the door because these are the little favors they can deliver on their way out the door that won't cost them anything but are superseding the decisions of the incoming president and his attorney general.
Yeah, that's exactly what they can do, and I think that's what happened here. I mean, this investigation could have been a big problem for Oregon Democrats, including Tina Kotek, maybe especially Tina Kotek, as she heads into reelection next year. The Biden administration, on the way out the door, cleared that out for her and for the Democrats in Oregon.
And by the way, Jeff, I don't want to get over my skis on this, but you correct me if I'm wrong on this. The reason it could be a major problem for Kotek is if I go back, if I reach back my memory to when this was going on, Tina Kotek had said that she had talked to Shamia Fagan 10 days before the story broke to the public that Fagan was implicated by these payments of $10,000 a month in cash. She was making 50% more in pure cash from the weed operation than she was drawing as salary as Secretary of State. So as a bribe, it sounds like it worked very, very well. Give her 1.5 times her regular monthly salary, 10 grand. She's making, I think, $7,000 a month as Secretary of State. And then Kotek apparently becomes aware that it's going on, but then doesn't tell the public until the story breaks about 10 days later and then says, oh, well, yeah, I know about that, and I've talked to Shamia Fagan, and then Fagan ends up resigning. But the governor didn't tell the public when she knew about it, did she?
No, she didn't, and Kotek is directly implicated with LaMotta. She took $68,000 in campaign contributions, literally in paper bags full of cash, during her first run for governor. And they held a fundraiser for her at a mansion that the LaMotta owners owned in Portland.
They weren't paying rent on. I was going to say, they made it look like they owned the house, but in fact they were just leasing it like some cheap, sleazy con man who shows up in a Porsche, except it's rented.
Yeah, and the other part of this is LaMotta's still operating in Oregon, despite all this stuff and the fact that they broke laws left and right. In Oregon, there you can still see LaMotta stores around the state of Oregon. I honestly don't know how that can possibly be.
I don't either. And, Jeff, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, at the time, and I think it was Willamette Week that broke the story, they indicated that LaMotta was in arrears on its state licensing fees to the tune of tens or hundreds of thousands. I don't remember which. They were in arrears to the IRS. They were in arrears to the Oregon Department of Revenue. And they were allowed to operate just about as many stores as they wanted to, and they were putting big packs of cash in the pockets of Major League Democrats, and they're still operating, even with all that in their background? Are they even paid up?
I have no idea if they've paid up, but the fact that you can get so sideways with the state of Oregon and the federal government and still be in operation is baffling to me. The good news, Lars, is that the Trump administration could revisit this decision to dismiss the federal investigation. It's in charge now, and it doesn't need to go with the Biden administration decision to tube this thing. And I think they should take another look at it.
I think they should, too. And, Jeff, I was hoping that I know there are if a prosecutor has the opportunity to charge you with a crime and then they decline to charge you with a crime, does that mean, I mean, as long as the statute of limitations hasn't run, then you can still come back to it and say we've reconsidered that decision?
Yeah, they could definitely revisit it. They just terminated the investigation. They didn't, you know, agree not to prosecute Fagan, as far as I know, or LaMotta, as far as I know.
Well,
so, yeah, the Trump administration could just change that decision if the facts merit it.
From your lips to Pam Bondi's ears, that is Jeff Eager. He's an attorney, political consultant, former mayor of Bend, and there's some dirt in the Kotek administration, and Shamia Fagan richly deserves to be investigated. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
email talk@LarsLarsen.com. He actually reads them. More with Lars right now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and there is one of those conspiracies that I think is going to get thwarted by the efforts of the Trump administration. It has to do with foster parents. It has to do with foster parents of faith, particularly the Christian faith. And it has to do with the insistence that foster parents have to affirm the gender identity of any children that they want to take in as foster children. I'm going to tell you all the different reasons that I think this is absolutely foolish, and it's going to end up hurting kids. But before I do that, glad to have you with me and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we love naysayers on this program. I mean, for more than 25 years, naysayers have always gone to the front of the list at 866-439-5277. Our poll on X today: would you consider canceling Netflix for pushing transgender ideology on your kids? Well, it turns out Netflix is literally lost billions of dollars already because Elon Musk went out and told the public, I'm canceling my Netflix subscription. He also suggested that others cancel their Netflix subscriptions for the health of their children. This is in the same subject matter as what I'm going to talk about involving foster kids. Musk himself added himself to the growing number of consumers who are canceling Netflix. And why? Because Netflix has in the past aired programs like Paranormal Park. Now, Paranormal Park is a cartoon show. It is aimed at children, but it includes a transgender storyline. And the idea is what they're trying to do is push an ideological and sexual agenda on very, very young kids. I mean, it may be one thing to say, well, there are movies out there that talk about transgender issues and things like that. When you're pushing this nonsense on kids who are 6 and 7 years of age, as Musk put it, this is messed up. It's not okay for the kids. So you can find the X poll at Lars Larsen Show and at LarsLarsen.com. But go back to the foster parents. Let's start with a couple of realities in America. Number one, you've got a shortage of foster parents in America. I'm not aware of a single state in America where they have an abundance of foster parents. That is, more foster parents than you have foster children to match up with them. Instead, every state in America seems to have a shortage of foster parents and an abundance of kids who would benefit by having a foster family to take them in. And in some cases, foster families decide to adopt children at the end of the day. So what's happening with that? Well, the state of Oregon had decided we are going to insist that all prospective foster parents affirm ahead of time, whether or not they know they're going to get a transgender child or not, that to be able to be a foster parent, you had to promise your government betters, your masters, that you would affirm that child's gender identity. Now, this is a real problem because it's a problem when you run up against people's faith beliefs. And I'm one of those people. Part of my Christian faith is that I believe God made us the way we're intended to be. Now, you can say that's right, it's wrong, whatever. I also think that on a practical level, even after you go get past faith beliefs, anybody who actually believes that you can change a boy into a girl or a girl into a boy, I think is crazy. I mean, it's biologically impossible. Medical science is awfully impressive, but you cannot change a girl into a boy or a boy into a girl. But instead, society has said, well, we're going to take some kids and we're going to treat them with hormones. It will end up sterilizing the girls. I don't know if it sterilizes the boys or not, but with the boys that want to become girls, we'll end up letting doctors cut parts of their bodies off to make them look as much like a girl as medical science can achieve right now. And the same thing in reverse, girls into boys. So you use hormones, you use a scalpel when necessary, and you modify these children. I think that is child abuse. I think it is monstrous to mutilate children, especially to mutilate their genitals so that you can achieve some kind of societal wokeness and say, why we just change that boy into a girl or that girl into a boy? Well, now the Trump administration has opened an investigation into the foster parent program that is run by the Oregon Department of Human Services. They sent a letter that was signed by the Assistant Secretary, Andrew Gradison. Gradison says failure to comply with a policy has counted against evidence against families when it comes to removing children from their custody. So in other words, a place where there are more foster kids than there are foster families, where foster families are in short supply, is going to set up a set of rules and say, we're going to insist that all those foster parents agree to affirm gender identity changes. Otherwise, you can't be a foster parent. So they're going to take something that's already in short supply, and they're going to run it even shorter. Now, the state's policy came under fire about 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, from a legal challenge by a Christian mother of five, Jessica Bates. We've talked about her case on this program. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, usually one of the most erroneous courts in America, handed Jessica Bates a victory in late July, just a couple of months ago, based on the First Amendment. In essence, even though I'm not a lawyer, I can tell you it works this way. If the state, any state, says to a foster parent, in order to be able to qualify as a foster parent, you will do what the government tells you to do, and you will say what the government tells you to say. That's why it gets into First Amendment territory, because the state is effectively saying to a parent, when a child comes to you and says, I believe that I'm not a boy as I was born, I'm actually a girl, or vice versa, the parent is then told by the state what to say. Well, the First Amendment not only guarantees my God-given right to freedom of expression, it also means the government has no basis to come in and tell me what I have to say or what I'm forbidden to say. They can't do that. So what Gradison, the acting assistant secretary of Health and Human Services, says, we want to roll out the red carpet and welcome faith-based families to participate in our child welfare system and to volunteer as foster parents and to adopt children. So they've started an investigation into what the state of Oregon is up to and whether or not it's constitutional or legal. Let's go to Mark. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Lars, I was wanting to hear your opinion of somebody getting shot in the neck with a 30-06 and it's staying inside their body.
You're talking about Charlie Kirk,
a shooter,
right? I mean,
yes,
you know,
sir.
You're talking about Charlie,
obviously.
Kirk. Yeah. I think that it is likely that if somebody was shot in the neck with a 30-06 caliber from about 200 yards away, that that bullet would stop in the body. I don't think that's likely, but I guess what I always wonder is when people come up with all these theories that something else happened that day, would you mind sharing with me what happened that day if it wasn't the murder of Charlie Kirk?
Oh, I fully believe he was murdered. I just think there may be more to the story than that. I mean, there's a lot of, rumors about Israel and Bibi Netanyahu and blah, blah, blah. I was just curious.
You know what, Mark? On the Internet, you can find rumors about just about anything. And all I'd ask you is, what does common sense tell you? There's a young man who's in custody now charged with the murder of Charlie Kirk. He is charged with a crime. He fired the bullet. The rifle is tied to him by DNA evidence. The bullet clearly took the man's life. And then the man who fired the bullet, allegedly fired the bullet, fled the scene and tried to evade the police, and did for a time, and then was finally caught. I don't know what other theory there is that would explain it or why that young man did it, other than simply hatred for another human being.
The Lars Larson Show. Right on the left coast. Get it? Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I kind of got a kick out of it today. I'm going to talk to Grover Norquist here in a moment. But some of the government employees who've been furloughed during the government shutdown that began at midnight, not last night, but the night before, they're upset because I don't do this with my email, but many people, when they go on vacation or they take a day or two off, there will be a message that says, I'm out of the office today, and you can reach me later on. Well, these furloughed employees have that message, except apparently after they went on furlough, the message was changed so that it includes some talking points that say, by the way, the government shutdown is the fault of the Democrats, which I think is actually factually accurate. And some of the government employees apparently think they own their email message. They don't. If you work for a company The company owns the email message. If you work for the government owns the email message. And Grover Norquist joins me now, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Hey, Grover, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you.
Hey, I'm kind of glad to see the government shut down because I think the Democrats are going to own this. They're trying as hard as they can to blame it on the Republicans. But when you've got people like CNN running sound bites of Chuck Schumer explaining why government shutdowns are so evil and so wrong and they should always be avoided, and then basically endorsing the idea that his side is not going to sign off on a continuing resolution that they've signed off on more than a dozen times. Give my audience an idea. Yeah. Is there a silver lining to all of this shutdown?
There is, because two things have changed. One is the American press is not monolithic. When we've had shutdowns in the past, there'd be three networks, and all three would come on at 6 and 7 and 11 and tell you that it was Gingrich's fault. And people didn't know any better. Today, we have podcasts, we have talk radio, we have you, we have lots and lots of different television stations, and you can't force people to believe something that's patently untrue. And even the guys who want to fib, like CNN, I don't know if you saw what CNN did, they literally had someone talk over Speaker of the House, Johnson, when he was explaining how what the Democrats did was funding illegal aliens, even yep. though they were claiming that wasn't true. And yep. so rather than let him explain, she goes, well, now he's telling you something that isn't true. but people made fun of that. And I saw it. I didn't see it on CNN. I don't watch CNN. I saw it on Twitter, where people were making fun of CNN.
Yep.
So even when the press lies, they get caught. So that's one, that information flow is better than it used to be. Second, this time around, they thought through what they wanted to do, meaning Trump and the Office of Management and Budget. They're doing very interesting things. They planned ahead. In the old days, not old, you know, 5, 10, 20 years ago, what they would do is they would say, you know what, don't come to work, but when we reopen in 3 days or 3 weeks, we'll pay you.
Yep.
So you don't save a penny. You don't save a penny by having the government shut down. I mean, what a waste of time. You know, before 1980, they didn't have you go home. You stayed at work because they knew sooner or later this would get worked out. So that's what they had to.
Well, Grover, before we go past that point too far, I think it's worse than that. But you tell me if I'm wrong about this. So you have a bunch of government folks who are deemed unessential. They go home. They're going to get paid for all the days they didn't work. And then when they come back to work, either their work will have been delayed and they'll be paid overtime to catch up on all the work they didn't do, even though they were being paid for that time that they weren't there. And they'll then earn overtime as they catch up, or the work will simply lag behind. And whatever service the American people were supposed to get, they won't get.
Right. This time, here's what Russ Vogt, brilliant guy, going to save, already saving billions of dollars. We're at a day one, two, and he's said, here are $8 billion in contracts that were legitimate for 1 year. I mean, Congress passed a law that said you can make these contracts. It was for silly Green New Deal stuff, okay?
Yep.
But Congress had under Biden, had approved it for some period of time. But once you hit the end of the budget year, that authorization isn't any good anymore, right? You can't yep. use it legally to buy anything. So he says, these are done. These contracts are dead. Well, that's a big way of saving money. It's $8 billion right there. And this is a way, and they're going to go through and decide which departments have too many people, because the contracts that hire people work the same way. And so you can decide, well, we had 100 people doing this. We really only need 90. We're letting 10 go. And by the way, we have that authority, because we don't have the authority that mandates that we keep going with this. So this time around, it has teeth. This time around, the Democrats so clearly, when you had the Senate leader back 7 months ago telling everybody, guys, don't shut it down, it'll empower the president. He didn't say the president doesn't have the authority to do this. He said the president has all this authority to cut spending. And guess what? It's going to be our spending that he cuts out. So don't do this. And so for 7 months, they didn't do it. And then they got all frustrated and wanted to do something, you know, loud and banging and to make it sound like they were working hard. And so they did. And he changed his mind. He changed his mind and said, I'm now leader of the band of doing what I said was the wrong thing to do 7 months ago. And so all this stuff is on tape. You know, it's like with those bank robbers, you know, that they walk in and they forget that somebody's filming the whole thing.
Yep. And by the way, Grover, that point about illegal alien health care, I've been mentioning this to people over and over again. And I've got the language right in front of me. It's from the One Big Beautiful Bill, in which the language in the continuing resolution said, in no event shall payment of, in this case, Medicaid, be made to a state under this section if they give it to an individual, unless the individual is a resident of the 50 United States and a citizen, or an alien unlawfully admitted or lawfully admitted for permanent residence. So green card holders get it. Citizens get it. The rest of you folks do not. It's right there in black and white. And CNN's trying to just say, if we talk over Johnson, Speaker Johnson, then we won't have to admit that this is true.
Yeah, I don't know how CNN has the guts to ask for an interview with a Republican congressman or senator for several months in the near future. How do you say to them, we're a news source? No, you're not.
No, they're very partisan.
Remember CNN? They were going to get better. Remember they said they were going to get better. They announced they were going to get more, you know, even-handed and so on, and that didn't last very long.
No, and by the way, have you seen the other development? Barry Weiss from the Free Press.
No, Barry
Weiss is now going to be the managing editor of CBS News. Now, I've always called them CBS News because it's BS most of the time. I have a feeling that Barry Weiss is likely to change that dramatically. Not necessarily conservative, but at least something that makes sense. And when CNN sees itself, and the other two, NBC and ABC, see themselves up against a new, changed CBS, I think this new competition, they used to have kind of a monopoly. The liberals had a monopoly on all the major media, and now one of the majors, I mean, because CBS still is one of the majors, is going to change, I think, dramatically, and I think it's going to change the whole narrative. That's Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google. Yeah, he's everywhere. The Lars Larson Podcast.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists at Oregon Medical Centers. Now, let me tell you our poll on X today. We come up with a brand new poll question each and every day out of the news of the day. Try to make it as fresh as possible. Would you cancel Netflix for pushing transgender ideology on your kids? The reason the question is being asked is that Elon Musk went on X and he was telling the public, cancel your Netflix subscriptions for the health of your children. And why is that? Because, among other things, Netflix had aired a series called Paranormal Park. It is a cartoon series. It was aimed specifically at very young children, and it included a transgender storyline. Now, as I understand it, Paranormal Park has now been canceled, but still in all, parents are becoming aware of what Netflix has been bringing into their home. And when Musk, replied to the post by people saying, well, this isn't a problem. It's not that big a deal. He says, yeah, that is messed up, not okay for kids. So the question I'm asking you today on the poll on X, would you cancel Netflix for pushing their transgender ideology on your kids? You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, yesterday's X poll, should Republicans agree to fund health care for illegal aliens to end the shutdown of the federal government? 99% of you agreed with me and said no. Only 1% of you said yes. I can't remember the last time we got a 99-to-1 result. And speaking of illegal aliens getting health care benefits, one of the most comedic things I've seen recently is all the Democrats running around, but not quite all on the same talking points, because some of them are saying, well, there's no truth to that at all. There is no truth that illegal aliens are getting Medicaid in America. Well, the fact is they are getting Medicaid in America, but the Democrats, most of them, have been saying it's simply not happening. We are denying the existence of that fact. So Caroline Leavitt, who is the White House press secretary for Donald Trump, was asked about that. And you know what's crazy? There are reporters out there who are so simple-minded that they say things like this. This is an actual quote from the reporter talking to Caroline Leavitt. It's against the law for illegals to get those benefits. And that reporter is factually accurate. But it would be like denying the existence of heroin addicts in America by saying it's illegal to shoot heroin. So, of course, there can't be any heroin addicts in America because that would be illegal. Well, you know what Leavitt answered back? She said, let me ask you, do you think that illegal aliens should get Medicaid benefits that was designed to help low-income families and Americans? What the Biden administration did was allow tens of millions of illegals. They paroled them into the system. You cover immigration. You know well it was a complete abuse of the system. They slapped a Band-Aid on it, calling it temporary, and then they allowed the illegals to get free benefits. You know who'd like free benefits? Hard-working Americans who are living paycheck to paycheck because of the Biden-induced inflation crisis. And she's absolutely right about that. But here's the other thing I'd ask you. I don't care how liberal you are. I don't care how many times you voted for Kamala Harris. Well, actually, I do. You should have only voted for her once, because there was only one opportunity for American voters to cast a ballot for Kamala Harris. I mean, she dropped out of the primaries when she ran the first time. Then she became vice president, chosen by Joe Biden because she was dumber than he was. And then he chose her, the Democrat Party chose her, as the nominee of the Democrat Party, despite the fact that she'd never received a single vote from a single American Democrat voter. She still got the nomination. And then people got the chance to vote for her. Well, fact is, the Biden administration believed that they wanted to give these things away. If you believe that we should have these programs, and I do, I think we should have programs like this, but they should have a very, very small number of recipients. Should we have a program so that if somebody becomes desperately poor, that they can get Medicaid, that they can get food stamps, that they can get TANF or temporary aid to needy families? Sure. And should we try to make sure that that number of people who are dependent on government benefits is as small as it possibly can be, and that people are encouraged to work their way out of dependence on the government? That is exactly what's happening right now. All that's happened is in the one big beautiful bill, they made it clear illegal aliens cannot receive Medicaid. Now, what does that do? If it kicks, and this is what the Democrats are saying, if it kicks millions of people off Medicaid, and why? Because they're illegally in America. They don't get Medicaid. That is one more reason for all those illegals to either self-deport or be glad that they're getting deported from the United States if they are cut off from that benefit. In fact, Chuck Schumer, about 30 years ago, Charles Schumer from New York, a major league Democrat, member of the U.S. Senate, was standing up in the well of the Senate, and he was actually arguing, you can't give these benefits to illegal aliens. If you give them these benefits, they're going to want to come to the United States. And that's one of the reasons they're coming, for the jobs and for the benefits that they get in addition to all that. And when you kick them off the system, do you know what that leaves? It leaves more money for the people for whom the system was originally engineered, for poor Americans who are actually legally entitled to get them. But you get dimwit reporters who seem to think, Well, if that's against law, it can't possibly be happening. Again, it would be like saying, there's nobody on fentanyl in America. Taking fentanyl like that, that's illegal. That breaks the law. So clearly, there's nobody dying from fentanyl or heroin in America because doing so would be against the law. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show on Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
The Lars Larson Show.